All right. My name is Hope Lane Gavin. Welcome to Just a Bite. I am going to introduce our intern at the Ohio Association of Food Banks, Chloe. This is her first time on the pod, so I just want her to take a second, introduce herself. She is our the association's food programs intern, and she'll be co-hosting with me today on today's Black History Month episode. Chloe?
Hi, everyone. I'm Chloe Myers. I am from Columbus, Ohio. I went to Ohio University, and I am currently an intern at the Ohio Association of Food Banks, and I'm really glad to be here with all of you today.
Now, Chloe, you know I got to ask more questions than what you gave me, so why are you interested in the issue of food insecurity?
So for me, I think just growing up and having friends and people around me that were food insecure, understanding that food, I think, should be, in my opinion, a right for everybody. Not just people who can afford it, but everybody. And so I think coming into a job that, for me, I never had any experience in agriculture, but it's just been so fascinating and awesome learning about the things that you can grow yourself and even like larger operations. It's just the variations in being a farmer or someone who grows any sort of anything. So I think that's been really awesome for me.
That's awesome. Thanks, Chloe. And I'm actually going to have you take it away and do the introductions of our guests today.
Okay. So we have Sharifa Tomlinson with Arrow Rock Farm and Urban Sanctuary, Christine Irby with Irby's Old School Farm, Khalid Kareem with Farm Right Natural Fruits and Vegetables, and Tia Stewart with the Narrow Way Farm. If you want, you can also talk a little bit about yourselves and maybe tell us what your favorite thing to grow / harvest is.
Okay, I'm Tia Stewart with the Narrow Way Farm, which is located in Brookville, Ohio, about 20 minutes from Richmond, Indiana, and we go fruits, vegetables, herbs, and flowers. I also do a lot of the organization for the Regenerative Farmer Collective, and also do some work with Agraria Center for Regenerative Practice. But outside of that, my favorite thing to grow would be fruits. I like to grow different types of like natives, pawpaws, things like that.
Hi, I'm Sharifa Tomlinson with Arrow Rock Farm and Urban Sanctuary. We're located in Riverside, Ohio, which is a little bit outside of Dayton. Some of my favorite things to grow are squashes and pumpkins. And I'll pass it on to Christine.
Hi, I am Christine Irby. I am one half of the Irby's Old School Farm. And we're currently located in Trotwood, Ohio, and we are poultry farmers. But what we love to grow are vine plants. So you got your passion flower, and you got tomatoes and cucumbers.
I am Khalid Kareem, and I'm in Trotwood, and I'm Farm Right Natural Fruits and Vegetables. And I love all vegetables and fruit, especially the ones that are nutritionally dense. And such as, I love the melons, I love the squashes, tomatoes, cucumbers. And I would say I got my introductory in farming with my grandmother. I grew up on a farm in Virginia. So I have experience picking cotton, chopping corn, peanuts, and priming tobacco. So as a person, not too many people has picked cotton before.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's a little Black history.
Yeah. You know. Thank you guys all so very much for just being here with us in community today, talking about your farms, talking about yourselves. You know, we invited you beautiful folks here today in honor of Black History Month. We thought what better opportunity to highlight Black stories of agriculture, food systems, and food security than with our strong local food purchase assistance cooperative, or LFPA, program partners, otherwise known as Ohio CAN. The history of Black folks in this country begins with agriculture. African people were captured off the continent and enslaved not just here, but around the world for the sole purpose of farming. Whether it was rice, tobacco, pecans, cotton, or corn, our expertise, largely stemming from the motherland, was the key to financial freedom for white people across the earth for centuries. The slave trade and the subsequent forced labor did a number on us as people, and as such, we are still reckoning with the impact of that today. On nearly every measure related to public health and economic security, African Americans still fare far worse than their white counterparts 405 years since the first kidnapped Africans landed in Virginia. There still is not parity when it comes to equitable lending and borrowing, from farmland to suburban homes. While 1619 may have been a long ways away for some, we know firsthand the lasting impact slavery has had on all of us as a people. Despite all of that, and still having many odds against you, you all have chosen to invest your time, your resources, and your energy into farming and into agriculture for a living. I garden at home for fun, and I know it being among the earth can be very healing for me, but if I think about it too long, it can also be very painful. So I guess my first question to you all today is, do any of you ever struggle with this too? The fact that they took something so precious and innate to us, our ability to farm, our ability to be holistic, and our desire to be with the earth, and they turned it into something so egregious that it remains a deep memory at the core of the Black experience. Do any of you guys struggle with that as well? Tia?
Okay, yeah, I would say that, first of all, I like to just make a note that we are not, as Black people or BIPOC people or people of color, not a monolith. So we don't all think the same way. We don't all process things the same way. We don't have the same feelings. And so while I agree with you, if you think about something too long, it can be really painful. It can also maybe stop you in your tracks. But I like to draw my strength from the Most High, and I have the scripture that relates to that. And I just want to read it real quick, please. It's, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, I just repeated that, and reaching forth into those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. And that's Philippians 3:13-14. So that thought of pressing on, and even though we've been oppressed, and not thinking too much about all of the things that that's happened to us, not letting it hamper us, not letting it stop us, but pressing toward the mark and the price.
I would say from my experience is farming, gardening, is like we're, lace with my Father in heaven, we're emulating. I feel like I'm emulating the Creator, God. So, I mean, that's the beauty, because I can have influence over creation. Not creation, I'm making something. I can start with a seed on time, in season, what I know, and then nurture that seed and protect it, and then see the fruit. Then the beauty that I found out about me, the beauty of giving it away. I found out I enjoy more, because I raised more than I could. Yeah, it was something about giving it away. I'm like, wow. So that's the beauty. And it's like, I'm being connected to the universe like a little God. I can make some changes.
That's beautiful.
Okay. So basically, I'm a newbie at farming. I've been gardening for 6-7 years. But when I learned that gardening, transferring into farming, is a business. But in our culture, some of us believe that is equated to slavery. So when I hear, when people say, you're a farmer, oh, you're doing slave work. No, I'm doing healing work. And then I'm on a path of learning how to regenerate that earth and learning the strategies of what not to do, what to do. So every day when we go into the field, when we go into thinking about farming, we thank the ancestors. That drum, when we walk out, that beat, that connection is powerful. Now when I go to Rural King, when I go to Tractor Supply, you got the Farmer's Almanac. So that used to be the Farmer's Bible. And some people, it is, still is. But I connect that back to Benjamin Banneker, because he also published 6-7 almanacs. He was pre-George Washington Carver, but we don't talk about him. Now we talk about the solar eclipse that's coming up. He also predicted solar eclipse. So when we think about farming, we don't talk about our history as far as sciences and engineers and how we work stuff out. That's my thing.
Yeah, I always appreciate that.
I agree with all three of them, but I also agree with you. Yeah, I think it's painful. I think it's painful that, you know, we don't have enough farmers now. I think it's painful that a whole generation of our farmers are missing. I feel it's painful that I have to be a placeholder for farming for younger people to come to learn how to farm. Like, it still, see, crying, it still bothers me. So yeah, it is painful, you know, but.
And she's the bestest mentor, by the way. She's the bestest mentor. She's the bestest teacher about reaching back and pulling somebody up, because our numbers are very low considering the population.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're in the hundreds versus the millions.
And I think that's where the pain comes from.
Almost like a genocide.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
That's it exactly. It's a farmer genocide for black farmers. And I think that that's what really bothers me. So yeah, it's painful. But then on the other hand, I look at today as I was like 7 o'clock going out to feed the chickens, you know, and I had my boots on and my pajama bottoms because like that was it for today. And I had my jacket on. But I remember like that jacket that I was wearing today was my grandmother's jacket, you know, and I've always wanted to like throw this jacket out, but blah, blah, blah. But that has become my farming jacket. So every time I go out there to feed these chickens, I think about my grandmother and I go like, okay, I'm good. I'm good. Or I think of her mother, you know, and her grandmother, who all raised chickens. And like, you know, so maybe that's why I'm doing it. Maybe that's why I'm farming, because it's just instinctual. Like, it's part of that.
Part of my heritage
and who I am. But wearing that jacket, it just makes me feel like, you know. Yeah. So anyway, that's where I'm at.
This has done exactly what I wanted it to do for me. I love being a community with
Sorry.
You. No, this is beautiful. But I'm so happy. Time.
But if I may piggyback. As a little boy, I going early in the morning to go work on the farm, and I'm holding down the reel. I'm in the back, and so I'm complaining. So my grandmother say to me, she turns around and said, "If I don't work, I don't eat." Grandma gonna starve her grandson. So, but the thing is this, as I was saying earlier, they have a cliche where they say, food, shelter, and clothing. And when we talk about farming, let's talk about Adam and Eve. They was in the garden. I mean, it's amazing. So a garden is something that is farming.
Yeah.
Okay, and the beauty about farming, because all my cousins and uncles have large family, unity. Mm-hmm. All of my uncle's farm, there's no bickering and arguing. It's unity. And that's what working in the earth does.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody come together. And it's about hands on. You know how to do something. It's not how you wear your makeup or how you wear your hair. You get your identity by your ability to do something. Whether it's going feeding the hog or go get the chicken for grandma. Mm-hmm. Go get that one. Mm-hmm. That's how you get your identity and your pride is what you can do, not what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got.
I love that. Yeah, me too. And I think I really appreciate everything all of you have said, because for me, growing up, I know, like, I always wanted to be on a farm and with the animals and everything, but I didn't think it was something that I was able to do with the skin color that I have. Mm-hmm. And so just hearing and seeing that it is possible for people that look like us, and that it does heal and it does connect us. And even though we aren't all the same and don't have the same perspectives and opinions, it still can bring us together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By healing, this is my reflection. You know, coming in consciousness, my grandmother was there with my mother. And I don't understand how my grandmother, I never seen her in the bed, like, she's up. I look back, how did she do it? Her energy, she never was depressed. The breakfast was cooked every day, lunch was cooked, dinner was cooked. She didn't get her, what they call, going and get your groove on. She wasn't partying. It's the farming connected her and grounded her to energy. It made her supernatural.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking back and I'm like, I got a whole lot of stuff. And some days I don't want to get up.
Chloe, I actually really, before you get into the next question, I really appreciate what you said about just growing up. You just didn't know. I've always associated farming. I talk about this a lot at the association, but like, you know, when I go to the fair as an adult and I see all these 4-H kids, none of them are black. I had never seen a black 4-H'er at a farm. I can tell you that much. Or at the, not at a farm, at a fair. Never seen one.
In a rural area until I was 6 years old.
They don't have them in Cleveland. I'll say that much.
Well, at the piggy bank, my father, which I mean, travel in 40 states and 40 cities. I go to fairs all the time. I love it. But my father and my uncle, but his family had a lot of land. They had a store. And this farmer was so progressive that one of them was she was a principal, like 19. And just from the same family, a farm, Stan O'Neill was the second highest paid person on Wall Street. That's his nephew from that farm, that culture. That's how powerful.
And see, there's that with Tia. She passes down that knowledge. Right. With me, my background, it was not passed down. I was in the, you know, outside. I got allergies. I'm thinking, I'm not going to be outside. I'm going in the city. There is that disconnect. So that's one thing that with our culture, we don't always pass down that storytelling. And we need to fix that. We need to make that connection because that's what you were saying with Khalid.
But also was saying, too, that the whole thing was to get off the farm. I want my child to have a better education. I want my child to go to college, have an education. I don't want them to be farmers like us. Yeah. That was a way of building.
And from my experience, farming was fun. I mean, it was, you know, farming. The beauty about farming, you have a lot of cousins. You have a lot of relatives. And you learn to socialize and you learn to work collective. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my experience living in Long Island, New York, off the farm, but every summer I would go back to work in the tobacco fields with my uncle, with my cousin, and that was the most gratifying, fun.
Yeah.
Even though we worked in the sun, because it was all about love, and I think it was in balance. It was, see, you got to sit down and eat at the table in the morning, sit at a table for dinner, and that was love. It's that organically balanced. You know?
Just for a second, I do want to mention that Representative Juanita Brent was in 4-H.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
For many years as a youngster.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so she, like many of us, that participate in, predominantly Caucasian activities,
right.
I have air quotes,
right.
going. She was like maybe one of the only ones. And so I have a little story. When I was 5 years old, my mother, I wanted to be a brownie. And so my mother went to go take me to sign up for brownies, you know, or whatever. And it was predominantly non-BIPOC. And when they saw me, they said, oh, we don't have any more space. But, you know, and my mother didn't get upset. What she did was form her own group. Mm. And so we had one of the only BIPOC groups in all of Ohio. And we would go to the campgrounds and we would be that little BIPOC brownie troop, you know, and Girl Scout troop. So that is what I've learned. You know, when people say you can't do over here, then, okay, I'll do over here then.
Create your space.
So I'm not going to just stop and lay down and, oh, why can't I? And no, I'll just go over here and do it until now, you know, it's integrated more.
Right.
But
if I may inject, growing up, part of my self-worth, my self-esteem came from my uncles, my dad, my aunt. not the football players, not the actors. So my self-value, able to like grow up and not get involved in drugs or alcohol. My parents, you got that from your essence of working, seeing men, knowing how to do things, knowing how to fix things, commanding. And for in Virginia, North Carolina, growing up, I'm born in 53. My uncles, when you're talking about diversity, my uncles were very diverse because the white farmers and the black farmers, I guess my uncles and everybody were so competitive that we all needed each other. There was no visible friction, okay? There were no, because everyone was hovering, was so, I guess, needed to fit.
Survival.
You know, it worked. And farmers was, back in those days, was so skillful, crafting. You know, my grandfather was a horse trainer too, had a log, and I mean, it's like people had skills, character. It builds character also, you know. And farming is just, we didn't, farmers, you don't lock your door either. No, you don't have no locks. It's about trust. Conversation, talk all day. How you doing? Friendly. You know, you never hardly find an aggressive, mean farmer. It's amazing, you know. They have time. And it's having the experience, like coming the Mecca of the business world, Manhattan. I didn't live in Manhattan, but 30 miles away. Having that balance is so beautiful. I mean, like, awesome. I mean, it's like,
thank you so much for all of those responses. When it comes to kind of making amends and the idea of everything that has happened with the USDA, it seems like the USDA has tried to make amends on some of the wrongs they committed early in the 20th century. Have any of you been able to take advantage of any of the loan forgiveness programs they've offered, and do you think they're enough?
Well, not our particular group, but Ms. Sharifa, maybe you can speak about what you have participated in.
So we don't have loan forgiveness. But
I would be nice. Tell it. Please tell it.
But what I have taken advantage of is with the USDA is a high tunnel. So I put a high tunnel up this year, and then also brush removal, and that's with the EQIP grant. And I will also be doing more grants along that line with EQIP again in the future. Yeah, so, and one of the things that we, with the Regenerative Farming Fellowship, that a part of that program, was that if it wasn't for Brother Gregory, who was also in the program, saying that he did it, because I went in, I own this land, this is mine, I'm not getting involved with the USDA, period, 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 that's just it, you know. They have a bad history and a bad taste in my mouth, so why would I do that? You know, they might end up taking my land away, like being like that. But then Brother Gregory came along, and he said, you know, well, he did it. So I was like, okay, you know, I trust his judgment. I'm going to go with that. So that's why I applied. And then that was, it has been a very good, very, very good experience. And then when Ohio Can came along, which is another, you know, USDA-funded program, basically, I was like, it took, I went to a couple of meetings, I heard a couple of things, and I was still like, I don't know about this either, because this is still like, you know, love you guys, but it's still like USDA up here, still kind of nervous, but that's been a wonderful experience too. So I feel like comfortable, like I still think that you have to know what you're doing, like talk to people and, you know, really like look at the parameters and things like that, make sure that you do all the required stuff, that kind of thing, but it's doable. So I like that. Good. But not everybody sees it that way. Right. Not everybody does USDA.
Yeah, and I also want to make the comment that, so USDA has like a strict guideline for, you know, getting into these programs where all of us, we took our personal funds. Mm. We didn't, you know, we didn't get this USDA loan. We actually should be qualified for this USDA loan because we are farming under these harsh conditions, you know, having to, like I said, take our own funds to buy our farms. But it would be great if they didn't have such a narrow definition of who qualifies for
like you
got to
be in farming for 3 years. And when homesteaders came here, when the European came here, they gave them land and gave them everything straight up.
Or where you farm?
Even at 40 acres?
No, they got more than 40 acres. Right. They got 40 acres. You could ride on a horse as far as you could ride in a day. Yeah, that was all your land.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's
the government
thing
gave them
do.
Everything. Fertilizer gave them. They had extension program to teach them to how to you know how to get ahead.
So they held their hand.
They did more than gave them. You know, just.
And I'm like geeked as heck because I got my tract. I got my farm number. I got my USDA in Trotwood. Yeah. Because we're not supposed to be urban farmers now. We're rural farmers because we're in a rural section of Trotwood. Right. So knowing the game, Sharifa was saying, but, knowing the game.
But that's the other thing. Because I'm not in a rural area, I would never qualify for any of the rural things. But I have 12 acres. Mm. So I qualify
as a
farm,
but I'm not
rural. So a lot of the USDA grants go to rural farmers, and I'll never be rural.
See, but a lot of times there's an exception to policy, and this is where we come in flexibility, and we're not dealing with AI. When we're human, there's always exception to the rule. We don't know that, but you can. There's always exceptions to the rule. All right.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has anybody else taken advantage of any other USDA programming?
I applied for the EQIP with mentor from Sharifa. It's just lethargically slow. Yeah. Like the government, like a turtle. It's lethargic. I applied for that in June last year.
Yeah,
I did.
Yet.
It was till June last year. And I'm like, okay, I got the farm. Yeah, April. And knock on wood, we'll hear, you know, if we got accepted in this cycle, March or April. So slow.
3 years. It was my goal for my regenerative farming fellowship the first year. And we are now going out into our third year in April. Third year. So it took me 3 years to get this high
title.
I'm
saying it's not expedited for anybody
right.
else.
So when you're
saying
it's like, right. Right. So, I mean, like, that's how long it took. Because every year I was like, what's your goal for this year? A high tunnel, high tunnel.
So it should be based on need. It should be based on need.
Yes.
And based how far you come. Basically, you know, like they say, the strong should help the weak. Who needed the most should get it. All right. Mm-hmm. It should be on a human factor. It should be on a human factor when you have someone that's look at it and look at the exception to the rule. You know, say, okay, because you've been held back and denied, we got to, they call it fast track you, okay?
That was a fast track.
Okay.
For BIPOC.
And you have to also have an umbrella, hold a person's hand, because they're always going to look and say, we're not going to allow you to fail, okay? Once you have a system, once you have put in a system, that system will kind of take care of itself.
And when it comes to when it comes to farming, black farming specifically, what do you think is important for the public to know about black farming in Ohio specifically and how it's evolving? And also, what do Ohio citizens need to know to support black farmers in being successful in the future?
40% of Ohio land is prime farmland, 40%. I am been here. And I'm very observant. And my background has been in dog shows, in the sport period dogs. So I've traveled all over America, rural America, city America, backyards. I've been in places that normally I wouldn't. That's my passport. So you name it, Lima, I've been to Ohio, I've been Sugar Bush all over. I don't see no black farmers. Now, in Suffolk, Virginia, my relatives, a black farmer, successful, North Carolina, my uncles, they say, I never seen I'm talking about a farmer with 1,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ain't no black farmer with no 100,000 acres. And plus the machinery that you need now, you need these machines are $1 million.
Yep.
The GPS mm-hmm. they have on the GPS costs you 6 figures. When you talk about black farmers, Ohio, where?
Yeah, we have sprinkled.
You know, it's like,
wait. Now that made me kind of cry when I realized the numbers. I'm going, whoa, what happened?
But so also the thing is this, they're pushing to not farm or cat, they're pushing for soybean corn, for ethanol. We can't eat corn and soybean. That's for livestock and ethanol.
It's just accessibility. It shouldn't be, you know, this big, huge research, because Google don't come up with anything for black farmers. It's just what's up there.
Yeah, and I guess one thing that people don't understand, you know, I hear some people, you know, say in the back rooms, like, well, you know, we live in a 2023 and everything is accessible to people. And usually it's people that don't look like us saying this type of thing, and they don't understand that what they have, not always, but a lot of times it's because of what their grandfather had or their grandfather's mm-hmm. grandfather had, and yeah. we don't have that history. Like we or maybe it was taken, because I like Mama Amope, she tells a story of her land. Her people had land, and it was like a midnight call. A farmer mm-hmm. wanted to either buy his land or buy his crops or something. I can't remember the exact story, and she's not here, but when he refused, there was a call basically on his head, and they had to leave their land by night so that he wouldn't be murdered. And that is a common story. So the land being taken, and so it's really, we again have all purchased our land without the assistance of, you know, the grants and that type of thing.
But it's also programming, like television programming, which our community is affected by programming. And what you want to be now, want to be a rapper, you want to be a football player, you want to be a basketball player. Those are the things that are imprinted on children.
Or so, even a lawyer, doctor. These things are also, like when Sharifa was growing up, she was never taught that she could be a farmer, Brother Khalid.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you make it attractive. Like, okay, what I'm saying is imprinted on children, what is their vision, what is program. So if it's not, if you don't imprint it, you know, so it's hard, because all of my cousins, you know, I got tons of cousins. One of my cousins, there's 9 cousins on the tobacco farm, and my Uncle Burgess had a lot of land, very successful. He was my hero. He was like the governor and the mayor. Mm-hmm. And all of my cousins, every one of them, they all have their college degree, and not one of them is farming.
Oh, that's what I said.
I just visit, and the farm, the land is still there. They have been growing some pine trees. My other uncle, my mother's older brother, was farming. He ended up with Alzheimer's. And when that happened, hit all of a sudden, he got lost. And his younger brother, they was in it together. So when he had this mental illness, they end up losing the farm.
And then the science behind farming as well, that's not taught in the schools. Yeah. You have this indoor classroom or whatever, maybe a little bit, but it's not a regular subject to talk about as far as this gardening. And when our babies don't even know what real food looks like, some of it, okay, this is not Barbie doll food. So as far as black farmers, you know, the knowing the culture of, like, okay, you're engineers. We're scientists, period. every year we look at the soil, we look at the growth, we're observing. So not giving that credibility to that intelligence as far as farming, instead of just looking at the labor behind it, you're gonna get that overshadowed of, okay, so black farmers, okay, yeah, that's nice.
But if we take some example, like Warren Buffett, Warren Buffett, if I may, it's a farmer. He's got, but he's a billionaire.
Bill Gates got a lot of land.
When we make it, now we have some football players, when we make it, it's all about imprinting. It's very important that you do what you see and what's entertaining. When we look at the way we dress, look at how that's telling you your programming, how you dress, how you wear your hair, what you, that's programming. And farming is something like...
It's not natural.
I am... No, farming is natural.
No, for our babies, well, it's you not have to natural.
But it's epigenetics, okay? God, when he said, Lord is my shepherd, I should I want, he makes me lay down the green pasture. So I was born into it. I was born in it, got to move around. And be honest with you, I want to say this. I got paid $5 a day for working on the farm all day. So this is in Virginia. Give you a little history. All day. So we got 1 hour for 12 o'clock. You got 1 hour. So at $5 a day for working and peanuts and corn. So when you plant peanut, you plant it so far apart, and you got a hole, and there's enough space that you got to go down the row, and you got to chop the weed. Everybody has a row. Say there's 10 of you, you get a row, you get a row. We all start off, and you got to go down, and there's a weed, you chop it. Same thing with corn. So corn is space. Now they space corn close together because of Roundup. So that's $5 a day I got. So you figure, so $25. But if you got, and then tobacco, I got $30 a day. That's at 13, that's like 50 years ago. I'm getting that's big money. So I'm giving you, so I would come back to New York, Long Island, and I buy all my fancy clothes with this tobacco money. And so very few people have that experience. I mean, $5 a day. But, and what was so beautiful about farming with the family, you move at your own pace. Everybody love each other. So when people say it's like slavery, you normally with your family, you pull together. And you also teach you not to waste. You learn not to be wasteful.
Speaking of pulling together and kind of coming together, how do you think local food systems and food networks can help with supporting black farmers more? And that idea of the community being able to help.
You go. We just came from a meeting.
We just came from a meeting, where we were talking about collaboration with, the 688 incubator kitchen space that's being built, the hub. And so collaborations like that, collaborations with, grant-supported Ohio Can or Ohio Association of Food Bank that Ohio Association of Food Banks runs, those type of collaborations. But also I feel like, educating people all around, not just our state, but all around the country, educating them about supporting the local food system and their local farmers so that we can have a resilient food system. Because at this point, we can grow all the food that we want to, but if the consumer is trained in going to, Kroger or, Meijer or wherever they shop at, if that supply chain fails, and we haven't had the support, and we're telling these young farmers to come in, and they come in, and there's no support, and then they leave, then now we have a system that is continues to be broken, and we have a problem.
Also, we can focus on health as well. Mm-hmm. Your food and nutrition.
Yeah. And how we grow.
So the point is understanding what food has certain nutrition, okay, and how to balance it out. That's the fun part, that you're powering yourself. And it's not about, it's about peace of mind and not about just chasing a dollar. It's about family. It's about family. It's about love, in which we'll get back. We'll get, we're lost in this hypo, but.
And we can feel like a tribe.
Yeah. So.
That's true, though.
And what I would like to see, what I would like to see is, like, they have, people could have something about the potato fest, they had the strawberry fest, the sauerkraut fest.
Corn fest.
Corn fest. Mm-hmm. What I would like to see, a harvest fest, where when we come, because I grew up in the South, in the summer you have abundance of vegetables. And there's a way to preserve them for winter. Canned, and that's fun. You learn how to do it. If the community can have something like that, where you go to your local gardener and you buy abundance at a good price, and then you learn how to package it for the winter, mm-hmm. to get ahead, it has to be some type of way of getting ahead. And the way you get ahead is you buy it in bulk, and then you come to the community and you process it together, and now you could use it into the next harvest.
Because we grow clean. Yeah, I was just saying, when you go to Kroger's, you have that label, or Meijer's, you have that label, that title of organic food. So we're not at this moment certified, but we use regenerative practices. We don't use Miracle-Gro crack.
Although we're not certified organic. Yeah. And a lot of times that food is not cost efficient for people that we want to serve. But, you know, just because you certified me organic, that doesn't mean, like, what does that mean? Although I'm doing organic practices, so I don't need your certification. Also, once again, playing in my own field, developing my own field instead of someone else's.
Like, I'm a poultry farmer. So when I saw that compost out there, that gold.
Right.
I'm like, oh, yeah, we do that. That's going to be in the field. You're giving back. We don't throw a whole lot of stuff away. We try to figure out a purpose to use that in our field. I don't want to give everything away, but I'm just saying we don't use a whole lot of the chemicals and stuff. That's not our nature.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we don't do a whole lot of tilling. Because that just messes with your ecological system. And that's the first thing when I see across the field. Oh my goodness, they're gonna get that corn. And it's all this mold and everything that's like released in the air. And I'm thinking, allergies is one thing, but you know harvest season is serious in Ohio. And all of a sudden you got a whole nother aisle. Oh, you got allergies? Oh, because it's harvest season. This is on sale now. Because you have to adapt to your environment.
And organic, in my opinion, it should be cheaper.
It should be cheaper.
Not. Mm-hmm. Right. No, it's not, because they use that word like health food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They deter, like, if the health food is more. No. It, you know. So.
And Tia sells a lot of herbs and stuff for teas and stuff. We're so quick to pick up a dang on supplement from CVS and not look into the food.
Yeah. So I think it really goes back to, like, the consumers in our state, mm-hmm. in our cities, in our counties, in our villages, supporting farmers. So, you know, going to the farmers market, subscribing to CSAs, and actually supporting the farmers. That's what we need, is people to realize that if we want to have a resilient system, you have to support your local farmer.
And the other thing is, also for me, I do a lot of outreach. So wherever you see me, I'm like, hey, I'm Sharifa, you're a farmer. You know, so it's just like, so people can put a face to farming. And it's like, whether you buy something from me or not, is not my point. My point is, you buy something from one of us. Mm-hmm. I never care who, but it's sort of like just getting out there and just saying, I'm Sharifa, I'm your farmer. And I hand out cards all the time. I have the little app on my phone now. And it just like, just so people know, like, oh, wow, farming. Oh, you know, and then sometimes people, like, I just got a call from Mississippi wanting to know about farming because she saw some article. And I'm just like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, so people are just to get that word out that we're here. Because I don't think that people know that we're here. And now, because we do have the Black Farming Food and Farming Network, we do have our RFF, we do have our collective, we're starting to get known and, you know, like that people are starting to say, oh, there are Black farmers in this area. You know, there are BIPOC farmers here. And then that's another way of getting it out there, too.
If I may piggyback, one way to start from a seed is to start out, if a person start out gardening,
mm-hmm. Oh, that's you, what you
start out
too,
gardening, and then it gets bigger and bigger. And then this is where the children, this is where the children learn from gardening. It's a hands-on. So it's important for me because we have farm, but you also have a garden, a small. So gardening is critical because that is the incubator. Mm-hmm. That's where the children go out and pick a tomato and see you plant and go
but
out there and be with
you. But they planted that tomato and they watched it grow. Right. They watered it and they observe it in that magic to see it harvest it.
It's hands on.
Yeah, that's a teacher in me. That's just
so
beautiful.
That's one of the things that Edgemont Solar Garden is doing this year. They're going out. I'm not sure if it's 100 backyard. It's 200 backyard gardens. So they're going to be helping people grow 200 backyard gardens in the Dayton area.
Wow.
And that to me is like, that's another way. Yes. So everybody doesn't have to be like farmer on this scale. It's just growing.
It's when
and that's why I don't like, sometimes I like the word farmer because it does kind of describe like farming a lot of times, but growing, like just, and I don't, you know, growing something in your yard, in your apartment, you know, in your RV. I mean, wherever you live, growing something.
And start out a gardener, you learn to be efficient. You gotta learn. If you can't get this little space to grow, you ain't gonna get no thousands of acres of grow. So you gotta learn how to grow. If you can't grow a quarter of an acre, forget about it. So you practice and then you say, I'm good at this. I'm good at growing tomatoes. I'm good at cucumbers. Mm-hmm. I'm good at summer squash. I'm good at this. And that's where people come specialize.
Okay. So, Chloe, another thing you were saying was what do Ohio citizens need to support Black farmers in being successful in the future? One of the things that I'm doing is that we have 12 acres. Two of them we're keeping for our children with our house. The other 10 acres we're leaving in trust for BIPOC farmers to continue to farm.
Wow.
So that's another thing. And that's not just like, you know, because a lot of people that have farms now, if they don't have children that want to farm, here goes this land, it goes to developers. Mm-hmm. So even if the person is not your relative, if they're a BIPOC farmer, support them. What do BIPOC farmers need? Land.
Right.
I mean, that's the bottom line. They need land. So why not, you know, leave that
too,
land?
But
like, you need land.
Because
you know what we can
with
find?
The land that you have, what about the tax break? We're talking about property taxes now. That's going to take the pressure off your neck so you can grow faster.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see that point. Yeah, absolutely.
Then you can get more seeds. You can get more equipment.
A lot of stuff.
Okay, you can get some pay for help.
There is a CAVU tax
that you can
for
do.
Farmers that you could have.
After 3 years.
Yeah.
Right. That, see, what did I say? Now. Good Lord.
He did say now.
He did say now.
Today, just thanking you all once again for your time and your commitment and your resiliency. These conversations aren't easy, but they hold a lot of weight, especially during a time in America where real and true Black history is being silenced and stifled intentionally. You all are leading and doing such important and vital work for yourselves, your families, and the people in your communities. I want to end with you all telling us in three words or less, what does the Black farm symbol to you?
I would say peace, and joy,
and
unity.
Nice.
For me, it's love, family, and happiness, and a good meal. Because one thing you work on a farm, you love to eat.
Yeah. Honestly, hope, the science. The science. Science or innovation. And legacy.
Ooh.
Legacy.
Ms. Sharifa?
Freedom, liberation, unity.
Mm. That was a good note to end on. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think thanks for having me.
As we consider the challenges Black and minority farmers face in America due to discriminatory practices and the lack of true reparations from the American government, it is important to continue to remember that Black farmers can succeed, they can live on, and they can pass their knowledge down to future generations. Although the traditional farming landscape of this country has not accepted or supported Black farmers in the way it needed to, it is time to look forward at what can be done now. Thank you to my co-host, Hope. And thank you to each one of the powerful, thoughtful, and dedicated farmers next to me. Sharifa Tomlinson, Khalid Kareem, Christine Irby, and Tia Stewart. Without you, this episode would not have been possible. Thank you for being here today and for sharing not only the challenges you face in being Black and being a farmer in America, but for also addressing how Black farmers are taking back spaces for themselves that they were told they didn't have a right to. It is essential to highlight not only the challenges faced by Black Americans, but also the spaces in which Black Americans are thriving, despite every obstacle that stands in their way. Thank you to all of our listeners and supporters of Just a Bite. Without you, Just a Bite wouldn't be possible. For additional reading on this topic, or if you'd like to connect with our guests on social media, please take a look at the show notes. Happy Black History Month!